Toronto.
And good afternoon. Welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, the host, and with me is Phil Conlon.
Good afternoon, Phil.
And today we're going to talk about the flotilla that is headed once again to Gaza. And later we will talk to Charles Cambagna, who is a lawyer. He is in New York, and he has some very interesting and educated things to tell us, educated opinion. As I prefer that to raw opinion. Just I like educated opinion. And then in the latter part of the show, we're going to talk to author, publisher Robin Philpott about the death of Jacques Parizeau, a major figure in North American political history, and, of course, one of the giants of the sovereigntist movement. I'm going to just start off by announcing this, by the way. Sunday, the 14th, there is going to be an event at Betsatoon, 612 Markham. And I'm going to read the statement on this. For Palestine, Freedom Flotilla 3, Gathering in Peace and Friendship Against the Blockade. Support for a free Palestine has been growing for many years. The Palestinian people are the forefront of their own liberation, and people of conscience are increasingly standing with them. Public understanding and support has created a climate in which national governments around the world are expressing recognition of a Palestinian state. Nonviolent initiatives that challenge oppression and build economic, social, and civil capacity are foundational to this growing support. Join us in a celebration of supporters and the current voyages for the current voyages of Freedom Flotilla 3, Breaking the Blockade, Promoting Trade, Not Aid, and Anti-Occupation Solidarity. Don't wait for the next crisis. Join us now. And that's Sunday, June 14 at 2 p.m., Betsatoon, 612 Markham. And that's, of course, in Toronto. And speakers will include David Heap, steering committee member with the Canadian boat to Gaza and Gaza's Ark. He was on board the Tahrir when it was stopped by the Greek authorities in July 2011 and again in November 2011 when captured by the Israeli Navy. Also, he joined the Estelle for part of its voyage in September 2012 and visited Gaza October 2012. He's going to be there Sunday, June 14, 2 p.m. Robert Lovelace, member of the Ardoc Algonquin First Nation, Canadian delegate on Freedom Flotilla 3, activist and professor in global development studies, Queen's University, will also be speaking. Other supporters will be there. And I think we are joined. I guess we are not. We're going to juggle our list. Something not unknown in show business. It's a, you know, if the trumpeter's not ready, you bring out the juggler. So we're going to hopefully reach Robin Philpott. We will start with Jacques Parizeau. We're going to work to get Mr. Lovelace. But we're very glad to be announcing this. Betsatoon, 612 Markham, Sunday, June 14 at 2 p.m. And we know, of course, the work of David Heap. He's been a guest on our show. And he and Mr. Lotayev, two very brave peace warriors. You know, it's kind of hard to be a warrior and a pacifist. That means that your warriorness is going to be involve being hauled around by your collar, kicked into the seat of the pants, tossed overboard into the water, hit with fire hoses, and such things. So when you do what Mr. Heap does and Mr. Lutayev and Mr. Lovelace, yeah, you're a pretty brave soldier because you have to be very patient with people who are persecuting you. I think we are joined now by Robin Philpott. Are you there, Robin?
Yes. Good afternoon, Phil.
It's great that you were available early. We're juggling our list. So,
okay.
But you have a big one. This is the Canadian story, the biggest one of the moment in terms of political leaders of the country. Mm-hmm. Mr. Parizeau, Jacques Parizeau, is acknowledged by all as one of the giants of the sovereigntist movement, And I'll just throw in one quote. I noticed that Chantal Lebert devoted quite a amount of space to him. She said that's how most Toronto readers know of what's going on in Quebec. They read her. As she said, of the great figures, Levesque some of the others, she said Mr. Parizeau was the most prepared. He was actually equipped, she said.
Right.
Could you enlarge on that as a beginning?
Well, Mr. Parizeau came from a bourgeois family but he was a bit of a maverick. You would say a liberal family, way back from the liberals in the in the 19th century. The family were liberal progressives, and he was when he was a brilliant student. In fact, he used to be in the 1940s. He was friends of the Mackenzie-Papineau group who went to fight. That's just an aside. But his father said to him. And he wanted to study economics. He said, "You have to go to their university." And this, you have to remember that in the late 40s, early 50s, the Canadian ruling class was based in Montreal. And here was a French-Canadian family who had a business, was in business. And he told his son, "You have to go to their schools, otherwise they'll never consider you to be competent." So he went to the London School of Economics. He also studied in Paris as well, but he graduated with a PhD at the age of 24, which is the very, very early.
He was diligent. That means he's a very diligent young scholar.
He was extremely diligent, and he was set to have jobs all over England, but he had this commitment made to a man from what is this business school here called HEC, Haute Etude Commerciale, to come back. And so he came back here and became probably he was the first Quebecer to graduate from London School of Economics. And he was immediately considered to be a brilliant economist by all schools. I mean, people had him lined up to be head of the Bank of Canada, you know, saw him as being of that potential.
So the ideal man in both English and French and has the academic credentials.
Yeah, exactly. And so he started teaching at this business school, but right after the election of Jean Lesage in 1960, which was the beginning of the Quiet Revolution, he was still, I think he was just 30 years old, 31, and he became the economic advisor to the Quebec government, chief economic advisor. And you might say he left his mark, his economic mark, on the whole Quiet Revolution in the 60s. He was not a sovereigntist at all. He was the man who conceived that he had this idea that in politics everything is possible except for a man to have a baby. That's what he used to say. He said, and that's even changing now. But he said, in politics, you can do things. You can accomplish big things, and which is they did. And he was the man who helped nationalize the electricity companies here, which was... Electricity companies had a long history of exploitation of Quebec, as pulp and paper companies did, and they did elsewhere, you know, in other places in the world, in Canada as well. But it was particularly bad in Quebec because you had a lot of big falls and big rivers, and they were controlled by an Anglo-American elite. And it was René Lévesque, who was Minister of Natural Resources, a liberal. They were not sovereigntists at all. Who said we have to nationalize this because we have to make sure that it, you know, develops, that people throughout Quebec have reasonable electricity rates, have access to electricity because it was in third world conditions coming out of the.
So they were disciples, followers of Lesage.
They were his core, both he, Levesque.
It's interesting about some of us have a problem with the expression the revolution, the Lesage revolution. But when you look at Levesque, Parizeau, no, it's a continuing phenomenon, isn't it?
Absolutely. And so he was the one, and of course, when they wanted to nationalize hydroelectricity, well, they couldn't get money. They couldn't borrow money from any Canadian banks. And so he said, well, we're going to go to New York. And he put together a file, and we're going to go elsewhere. We went to Japan. We don't have to be dependent on the Anglo-Canadian rulers, bankers, yeah. And that's how they did it. And it was one of the most successful accomplishments. And they'd also developed this.
A lot of our big meetings in Canada take place in New York with bankers. I noticed that.
But I mean, it's like you're trying to do something, and then you had this people blocking you, basically in Montreal and Toronto, the Bay Street and what they used to call St. James Street, where the bankers were.
It's not St. James anymore.
No, it's St. Jacques. Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, the Quiet Revolution.
So he was. Just for Toronto listeners, if you'd like, I'll just tell you a little anecdote. I had the honor of working with him on his book, and which we brought out in English, by the way, in 2010. And he was an advisor to the pulp and paper industry, a pulp and paper company here in Quebec. And he had to come to Toronto as an advisor. He was 26 or 27, I think, at the time. And they were meeting at the very upscale Granite Club there in Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the advisor. And the head of the Pulp and Paper Association started describing to all the members, all the companies and representatives who were there, he said, how he succeeded in this factory, in this plant mill here in Quebec, to keep the French below from the foreman level and down. They couldn't get above the foreman level. And he was explaining how he did it.
He was doing that, telling a public crowd how he did
it. Yeah,
not
leaders,
a crowd, a bunch of wealthy
the
people.
Industry, how they could keep the Frenchies at the level of foreman and below. And then he looked over and he realized that it was Jacques Parizeau, who was there, a young man. And he said to him, sorry, Jacques. So, I mean, this is one of the things. But Parizeau did not become a sovereigntist until 1969.
That was his Booker T. Washington moment.
Yeah, yeah. And some people were here making a joke. He said he was taking a train across Canada, and he started out as a Federalist and arrived as a sovereigntist. And the joke here is that that's why they eliminated passenger trains. So, but no, he was a man who was a winner.
But how did he account for that road to Damascus moment? What happened on that train ride?
Well, there was a big movement going on, and he just thought it wouldn't work. And then, from what I understand, is that he was preparing his. Because he stayed in after Lesage was beaten, and this shows that what at that time Quebec's Quiet Revolution was multi-party in a sense. It was the Union Nationale, but they kept him on as economic advisor, and he was going there and he was going over all his papers, and he realized that the only future for Quebec's economy, and here you're talking about an economist with a large view, because a broad understanding of the economy. He said the only way that Quebec can ensure its development, economic development, and proper distribution of wealth was to become independent. That's what it was. As he was going through all his papers and preparing for this meeting.
And he found he had to tell the truth.
Yeah. And he became it, and of course he never wavered, and he went into politics, and it was for many years it was very tough. He's a militant as a person. I mean he refused his bourgeois background and bourgeois advantages in order to be a professor and in politics, because he knew that was the only way you can accomplish. In the long run, really accomplish things.
Well, how is Quebec now, this in the latter stage of this interview, how are they reacting? You know, when Levesque died, it really had a galvanizing effect.
Absolutely.
What kind of mood is there? What are people saying now about Jacques Parizeau?
People are saying that it could be, that it is like that, because that is like after 1987 when René Lévesque died. Because some people are saying we abandoned him, you know, Mr.
Which was a story with Levesque, right?
Yeah, and they're saying, well, we have to learn from what he stood for. You know, Mr. Parizeau has been dragged over the coals, particularly in English Canada, but here in Quebec too, for a statement he made after the referendum when it was, you know, this sort of slim victory for the no, but it was with a lot of dirty tricks in it. And he made this statement, which people have kept repeating, and they just can't get over it. He said in a film, which has been played two or three times since he passed away, he said, "The whole society has condemned me." He said, "I have never put anybody in prison." Whereas Pierre Trudeau, of course, he and Pierre Trudeau clashed for many years, locked up 500 innocent people and sent the army into Quebec, and he's considered to be a great Democrat, which is it's a very accurate way of looking at things. You know, I mean, he was mad as hell the night of the referendum because, and as we've proven over the years, the way that the Canada treated Quebec's electoral laws was like. It was a colonial attitude, you know. Yeah.
You've written a book about it.
Exactly.
People should go, Robin Philpott, and look at the list of books. But you covered that whole subject of the interference in the internal affairs of the of that election process. Just the last thing I want to mention. Mm-hmm. Now, you just had a change of leadership, Ms. Marois, and there was a state. An assessment of her and this very controversial stuff that she raised with a charter. Where did Mr. Parizeau come down on that subject?
Jacques Parizeau spoke out publicly and came to public meetings in opposition to this charter. He said this is a mistake. He says Quebec is an open society, and it's diversion. He opposed it very much, and he was very much criticized by certain PQ people at the time, including Madame Marois, because of his position. But he was a very principled man throughout. Huh?
Yeah.
And what's interesting, I should mention, there is a change of leadership here, and everybody's wondering what Mr. Péladeau is going to stand for. I think that he's learned.
Him react to the same issue. What did he say?
He just said no. We're not. Somebody tried to get him to speak to that and speak in favor of renewing this idea of a charter of values. And he said no. He said Quebec is an open society, always has been and always will be, and we have to include everybody and convince them of their interest in sovereign Quebec. So I would say that period is behind us.
Good.
Some people may want to keep reviving it, but I would say it is behind us.
The Parizeau legacy. Tomorrow is going to be big. We're going to be talking to you again soon about this subject, and we regret the course. And
if people want to read his books, because sometimes it's the best thing, I mean, once again, I'm promoting Baraka Books, but we did publish it in 2010, his book, his latest book, which is like his political testimony.
And it's available in English.
It's available in English. We published it in English.
Great.
And nobody wants to read what he had to say, but I tell you, it's a good read. It's a good read.
Yeah. Well, thank you very, very much, Robin.
Okay, great.
Talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye. Robin Philpott, publisher, Baraka Books, author, and remembering Jacques Parizeau, whose book of essays they published, Baraka. I can remind you again, on Sunday, June 14, 2 p.m., Betsatoon, 612 Markham, David Heap is going to be speaking, and Robert Lovelace. Robert Lovelace is from the Algonquin First Nation, and he's a Canadian delegate on the Freedom Flotilla 3. That's a very important matter. And by the way, if you want background, you can go to gazaark.org. And learn more about what's going to happen there.